This is the Cross Conference Cast for October 27th, 2010. Rival Schools United by Podcasts. On this episode of the show, we discuss the result of this year's Portland-Santa Clara game, other college soccer news, the survival odds of WPS, and the women's national team that's headed into qualifying for the World Cup. For more on this show, check out crossconference.com. Hi, this is Joan.
And this is Ruth.
And we're back. It's been a very long time since we last recorded a proper podcast without it being an interview or having something special going on. It was really hard work, I have to say.
No, it was a lot of fun. It was really hectic for a while there. We had like interview after interview after interview, and you know, one day we had two interviews and they ended up being seriously back to back, and that was unexpected. We weren't prepared for that. I wasn't prepared for that.
Yeah, but I think that one turned out all right. It was definitely a highlight to talk to someone like Maxine Goins, who I didn't know too much about, and she turned out to be really delightful. Did you have a favorite interview, Ruth?
I don't know. I really enjoyed our interview with Julie Ryder.
You mean Wades?
Yes. I was giving you an excuse to say her name. The interview with Maxine, that was so unexpected. That was a bad way to put it. Not unexpected that she was good, but unexpected that she had so much energy.
She was going to get food, so I would have a lot of energy too. If I wasn't angry, but yeah. I really like that. I mean, I have a fondness for our interview with Corey just because it was the first one, and it was really nice.
It was really encouraging. It was a great way to kick off the project.
I wish I had not messed up recording, because there's still a lot there that I think would have been really fun to put in there, if only it just didn't sound like Corey's responding to nothing. It turned out well, but we'll jump into the discussion of the actual game, because it was played on Sunday and we took a few days. It's Wednesday now. So we took a few days to reflect and process our emotions, because we're girls.
I ate lots of chocolate and ice cream.
Yeah.
I actually had chocolate cake for breakfast. It was really good.
I had eggs with sriracha because I'm Asian. So, Ruth, how did you feel about the game this year?
I think it's the first one that I've seen in a couple of years, because those 2 years in exile, I had classes, I think, during the game and had no way of recording it. So I was really excited to watch it. I had company over the weekend, and so we planned it so that we'd get to watch the game together. So that's really my first time actually watching that particular game with someone else in the room, and it got very noisy and heated for a while, especially during the second half. So that was a lot of fun, except for the whole commentary deal, because we got, you know, partway through the first half and spent about as much time complaining about how lousy the ESPNU commentary was. Nothing against Portland, because yeah, they were dominating that half, but like We talked to Julie, and she specifically said to us that, you know, her part of preparing for that game was to feed the commentators information and, you know, be at their beck and call basically. And they pretty much ignored Santa Clara. You know, just it was really disappointing.
Yeah, I don't know, like I love Portland obviously, so any chatter about Portland is, you know, fun, but even, you know, from my perspective, I was like kind of tired of it after a while. I was just like, talk about the game. Would you like I love Jessica Sao, but I don't need to hear about, you know, her father's travel plans. You know, and I'm wondering if the emphasis on Portland discussion from the announcers was probably due to the fact that they heard all those Portland stories after the Santa Claus, like, because I'm sure that for weeks, you know, Anne Marie had been, you know, she knew all the Santa Claus. It's not like she didn't know them. It's just like, I know in the moment when you're working, you can't always draw on your deep reservoir of, you know, anecdotes, and you're just gonna kind of. You're just going to draw on what you heard last. So I wonder if, like, to get if I'm going to give them any benefit of the doubt, it would be that. But the announcing was kind of lame. I mean,
Hence, 5 minutes directed towards Keelan's hair.
yeah, that was a fun story, but it was like that.
It
Okay,
was very us.
yeah, it was very, I was like, oh, we didn't ask her about that, but yeah, because I don't know if it was like a sensitive subject or something. Like you don't want to. Like piss off the players, not that Keelan is the type of person to be pissed off, but the game itself was probably like I said, it was the best game since 2006, probably combined performances that was the best matchup since 2006. 2007 and 2008 were both played at Portland, and they were kind of blowouts in a way, not necessarily blowouts, but it was like. There wasn't a whole lot of ambiguity about who was gonna win.
Those were both very rough years for Santa
Yeah,
Clara.
they were rough years for Santa Clara. Very, very rough. And so it's good to see that these past 2 years they've been getting back on track. And they had a they. They put in a really they put up a really good fight. I thought I also saw the San Diego game, and I thought San Diego gave them a little more trouble, gave Portland a little bit more trouble than or consistent trouble, I should say, than Santa Clara did, which is unfortunate. But I mean, I was surprised that Portland controlled like an entire first half essentially, and you know a good deal of the second at Buckshaw. It was yeah, there was something about the wind, but I don't think that really factored into it too much.
No, because they were talking about that in regards to Bianca and her kicking abilities, because she's got a pretty powerful kick and she was kicking into the wind during the first half, and you could see the difference of her kicking into the wind in the first half and kicking with it in the second. But either way, she's got a pretty strong boot, and essentially it was a non-factor. I mean, Santa Clara was not having a problem with their keepers. It looked like a lot of hesitancy up front, and just some immaturity, because it is a pretty young team. I think the game changed a bit for Santa Clara when Lauren Matheson went out. And it changed again when Julie Johnston came in, which was it was about midway through the second half, I think, and you could see a definite shift in energy. They attacked a bit more and just it looked a bit better. But yeah, I mean it looked like a lot of the issues were just up front and in the midfield. They would attack, but they weren't taking the shots. They weren't getting through Portland's defense. I don't know. I mean, I think next year It'll be a different story, you know, barring a massive number of injuries.
In terms of Portland playing, I think you saw a drop off when Kendall Johnson went out. Kendra Chandhoke was her replacement, and she's been recovering from an ACL tear earlier at the beginning of this year. And you could definitely see that side become a little bit vulnerable once she came out. In terms of chances, I mean, Bianca Henninger was going to pretty much stop anything that was possible for a goalkeeper to stop. So, I mean, if it's even within the realm of possibility, so it was really up to Portland to create that, you know, world-class finishing. There's no way anybody could stop that chance. And they are capable of doing that a couple times a game. And so that was just up to them to when they would do it. I haven't really seen Santa Clara's attack this year. They had some good chances. Obviously, there's that one that was cleared off the line, and then the goal that was taken back. And if you were maybe, I thought it was a tough call to make. Obviously, if I were on the other side, I would be like, that's an awful call. That was horrible, horrible call. But at the same time, if your only chance is if you're letting the referee decide that, you know, that's trouble. Don't let the referee decide, you know, if that goal is going to be there or not.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it could have, it's from this side, it's a contested loss, and if the ref had decided Santa Clara's way, then it would be a contested tie. No one was going to be happy with it. But I agree. I mean, if your only chance is going to be one decided by the ref, not that it was their only. I mean, like you said, there was that one that was saved by the post player, and
Taylor
there was a
Brooke Taylor is her name.
and there was one there was I think there were two other chances that I liked, and one of them I remember, it was Olivia Cly, and she got taken down by the keeper, so she didn't get the shot off, but I can't remember who the other one was. But yeah, I mean, they didn't create a lot of chances for themselves. There wasn't a lot of follow through, and you know, it was I didn't expect them to win. That a tie would have been nice, but the game was Portland's. I mean, Portland didn't have to put in a huge effort.
What do you mean they didn't have to put in a huge effort?
Santa Clara just didn't impress me. I mean, they did well. They did better than they've done, you know, the past few years. But it wasn't, I don't know. I felt like if Portland had felt like just nailing them over and over again, and if there had been a different keeper in goal for Santa Clara. I mean, I think that was the big thing, was
That's true. I
we
mean
had
that
Bianca.
we don't have the players this year, Portland, that shoot a lot. We used to have that. Like they just take a lot of shots, which in this case it wouldn't have been helpful because Bianca would have stopped them all. So I mean, and in this case, the strategy that they've been working all year, which is just find the world class finish that nobody could stop, that was exactly the strategy they needed.
For this game.
For this game, and I guess and it's been mostly working throughout the rest of the games as well. They're not scoring a whole lot, but the goals that they are scoring are pretty great. But I think in terms of the effort, I saw more energy and anger from the bench of Santa Clara than I really saw on the field, and except for the one the goal that got taken back. But for the rest of the game, it was Brandi Chastain. And well, Allie Wagner looked really upset, but she didn't say anything, probably
She
because
looks really tired.
Brandi was enough, probably. Yeah, it just, I mean, it kind of breaks my heart that the way that the program is struggling. They had 600, not the program, but itself. They'll always get good players, and they'll always play good soccer. But like 695 people to watch, your rivalry game.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. And I want what I want to see from Santa Clara is I want to see them make a really deep playoff run this year, and just make it really good.
But they're gonna run into Stanford again. I mean, they made a fairly deep one last year, but they ran into Stanford, and that's they're not gonna get through Stanford.
That it's yeah possible. I mean, Stanford could have an off day maybe, but I mean, I want to see that for next year so that they gain a little bit more confidence. What Corey Alexander said about Stanford maybe getting their recruits now kind of hurts in a way, because it's like Stanford has sort of a storied program, not but it's not like Santa Clara. In my opinion, it's like I don't know. It makes me sad to see that go by the wayside. Because as much as I love to tout Portland's superiority, it's like if everybody else is just dropping off, it's like it's not much to be pleased with.
Yeah. Although I was thinking as you were talking, I gotta argue with the most passion being shown by the bench. I think you got
And
a lot of
Bianca.
and Bianca. I mean, you got a lot out of Bianca. There were times in the second half that she went over the midfield. Like she pushed way up. She was running way out. She was way up past the halfway line. Like that was. I mean, I know I've complained about that with Boston College's keeper, but like, you kind of needed that for Santa Clara in that game. Like, you needed her to be pushing and to be. I mean, and it didn't even really seem all that reckless at certain points. It would screw him in other games, I'm sure, but if they could have another Bianca and have her be a field player, they'd be set. They'd have
Yeah.
that energy at both
Yeah.
ends of the field.
That would be great because Santa Clara has not scored against Portland for 4 years.
Oh.
Like someone just like told put that on one of the boards or something. Like this is a senior class which excluding Amanda Poach has not scored against Portland. And Portland has a senior class that has never lost to Santa Clara.
Oh, wait, Lindsey Johnson. She can't. Oh, well, she was injured in 2006. Never mind, you're right. Amanda Poach.
Yeah, I mean I don't know that I that should light a fire under them. You haven't scored against Portland in 4 years. Like, let's go. If that were on the other side, it'd be like, no, we gotta punch these jokers in the throat. Is what's going on.
Well, it's an interesting senior class. I mean, there's a 6-year senior and a 5th-year senior, and then Maxine and Anessa. And I was really surprised. Anessa didn't see as many minutes as I thought she would. I mean, she's been scoring this season, and she made a lot of attacking runs when she was there, but she wasn't on the pitch. Really, as much as she needed to be. Kendra Perry's the other senior.
So I guess have we discussed this to death now? I mean, I'm sure that our listeners are probably tired of like, God, we don't care about Portland and Santa Clara. Just talk about something else.
Well, then they'll be just thrilled to know that we're not done posting our rivalry reviews.
Yeah. We have a lot of great stuff upcoming. We have a Rapinoe.
Yeah, we have a
I don't
Rapinoe
know.
and we have a national team player.
Yeah. Well, in terms of
They might or
Portland,
might not be the same thing.
they play San Francisco next at home, and then St. Mary's at St. Mary's. And that closes out the conference play. And the WCC does not have a tournament, so whoever has the best record at the end of the conference play is the winner of the conference.
This was Santa Clara's first loss in conference. It was their first goal given up in conference.
Yeah, that was impressive. I mean, I can see why. They're not going to give up a lot of goals.
Yeah. Well, the standings right now are Portland sits at the top of the conference, and they're ranked number two in the nation. Santa Clara is ranked 10th in the nation and is second in the conference because of that loss. They played Gonzaga on Friday and beat them like 10-0. No, it was 5-0. And Gonzaga's third. San Diego is just behind them, and then everyone else just kind of trickles down. So, I mean that's decent. I'm really surprised at Santa Clara. Really happy that they're sitting there. Not a bad deal.
Yeah,
This is the way the
this is
conference is supposed to look.
Okay.
FYI, not like other conferences this year.
Yeah, who knows what's going on with those conferences.
Can we talk about the Pac-10?
Yeah, but let's take a small break and then we'll come back because we talked a long time about Portland. So let's take a small break and then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about we'll talk about the Pac-10, the ACC, and the WPS, which is not a conference. Who knows what that is? But we'll be right back with the Cross Conference Cast. And we're back with the Cross Conference Cast. I'm Joan.
And I'm Ruth.
And let's talk about the Pac-10. WTF, UCLA. Like, what is going on over there?
I don't know how you explain that. The standings right now in the Pac-10, Stanford is undefeated. Oregon State is undefeated in the conference, but they've played one less game than Stanford. USC is third, which is really interesting. They're tied for third with Arizona State and Washington. And then in fourth place, you've got California. And in fifth place, you've got UCLA. Below that, you've got Oregon, Arizona, and Washington State. It's interesting. I mean, we knew that Stanford was going to be on top this year. And since UCLA has been missing Alex Morgan so much, it's pretty much expected that they're going to fall the way they did. Alex Morgan's a really key component of their, as much as they don't want to admit it, she is. But UCLA, I don't know. They are on a two-loss streak. They lost to Oregon State 3-0 and USC 1-0, which is a big deal because I think it's like the first time in 10 years or something that USC has beaten them. I'm not sure what their national ranking is right now. 20. UCLA was ranked 20 when they lost to
Oh,
USC.
wow. And that loss came right on the heels of ESPN.com article about Jill Ellis's recruiting advantages being a youth national team and full national team coach. The coach of USC, Ali, unpronounceable last name. He was a little bit critical of Jill Ellis, her recruiting practices and her advantages as a national team coach. The from
Apparently
the from the
he's hung out on
published,
soccer.
huh?
I said apparently he's hung out on big soccer.
Yeah, apparently. Most of his criticism came in context of Jill having more time to spend with the players in the non-school season, preparing the national team players. And Jill countered with the, well, I don't spend as much time in the preseason with the players who are there, are still in LA while she was in Germany.
What does that have to do with recruiting?
I don't know. But I mean, it's the advantages as well. And lots of people sort of criticize her playing the national team card in terms of advantages. And you know, just getting players in with the slight promise that they'll be called up to the national team. It's certainly sketchy if you, in a way, and unfair, sure, maybe from another coach's perspective if they're complainy. But like, who does it really hurt? And you can either, who it hurts is either the player, and we've talked about this before, that the players get hurt by being at UCLA, so we won't go over that again. But
and not injured, but developmentally.
Yeah, speaking. Yeah, developmentally speaking, they're a little bit behind, I would say. That was my opinion by going to UCLA, and then it also maybe hurts the national team that if someone's just drawing from UCLA. I think the main injured party here would be the players. Those girls who are, you know, they listen to that and then, you know, maybe make a decision that's not the best for them. But
do you think the U20 performance this year might impact perception of UCLA? I mean, the U20 performance combined with UCLA's like non-record.
Yeah, like I think UCLA's performance this year is affecting the perception of UCLA. I'm sure that will factor into it. I mean, this is that was the worst tournament. I mean, like ever. Not qualifying, but the actual tournament. That was the worst tournament any US women's team had ever had. Yeah, that's got to factor into something. I mean, that Tony DiCicco could take the miracle team that was not, as Keelan Winters put it, that was not filled with, you know, the superstars necessarily. I mean, it was filled with plenty of superstars, but it wasn't.
They weren't like superstars at the time.
Yeah, they were not superstars at the time. That and in a year that I won't say that the U.S. should not have won that, but I mean, they definitely earned every single win, and it didn't seem as it seemed that was harder than what the situation that Jill Ellis was given. Like in Chile, it should have been harder to win than in Germany. I mean, granted, Germany was just going to roll over whoever they met, but the U.S. never got the chance to meet Germany, did they? No. I was like, what? I know it's been a long time and I have some problems, but yeah.
I mean, I think the U20s played Germany before the tournament and did not do well. And everyone can say, okay, well, that's a warm-up or whatever, and that was getting them prepared for the tournament. Well, no. No, it didn't prepare them at all. I mean, that was a very complacent team. Very complacent coaching, unimaginative selections for that team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, that I sort of outlines the thing that I was saying with our discussion in with Julie Ryder, the whole, like, the bright, shiny stars and how they're already bright, shiny stars. And so it's like, oh, you just go out and shine. that's not really going to work anymore. Germany is like, they're monsters, and so it takes a little bit more to get past them, but
they're boring. Yeah. Monsters, but they win.
They are boring monsters. Anyway, so the Pac-10, Stanford's just gonna win everything, so yeah. The ACC, that we really care deeply for. My alma mater, Maryland, beat UNC at UNC. And by most everyone's accounts, it was a very fair win. Maryland was missing two starters who got red cards in the last game for it seems really dumb things, like talking back to the ref or like swearing at them or something. It's just like, ladies, pull it together. Let's see. UNC has lost two games in the conference, and they're losing a lot of their players to injury. Okay. It's a harder year for them, I guess, but their hard year is some other program's like really great year. So we'll see. I think they're probably the most beatable that I've seen since in a while. It's like the early 2000s. What was that? 2004 or so. They were very beatable. They still don't lose a lot even when they are beatable. But anyway, you talk about Boston College.
Yeah, I'll get there. I was really interested to see the standings as of October 24th. Florida State is on top of the conference. North Carolina is in second. Then Maryland and Virginia are tied at third. Wake Forest, Duke, and then Boston College. I'm really disappointed in Boston College. I had said, I think in our last regular podcast that, you know, you had asked me who can beat Stanford, and I said Boston College, and right after that they started their losing streak. Which I look at, you know, I think the big names on the team are fairly young. I think the team probably got overconfident and haven't really bounced back from that. Although they did recently post a win over Wake Forest. They had a 3-0 loss to Duke. And Duke is not, I would say, probably the strongest team in the conference the past few years. Not named UNC. Let's see. And Maryland, I remember saying earlier that, you know, unless they beat Boston College and UNC, I'm not really going to pay attention to them this year. And now they've done both of those. So that's impressive. I honestly probably couldn't care less about Maryland. We went to that, remember that game we went to mm-hmm. where they played West Virginia?
Yes.
It was one of those teams, or one of those games where you don't really care about either team, but, you know, it's nice to be at a game.
Yeah.
I never would have thought that they'd be so strong this year. Probably a team I should pay more attention to. But, you know,
I think they've had it coming for a couple years. They've been kind of circling, like, and looking for their... they're not, you know... They're not the power punchers. They're going to wait a little bit, but continue. Sorry.
I was just looking at, you know, them and Virginia. Virginia's also been circling for a while. They had that big win back in 2005, was it, that they took the ACC? But now, you know, now Maryland's creeping up there, and you've got Florida State sitting on top, but I don't think they're going to win the conference. And you've got Boston College, that flash pan, and just, I'm so disappointed. I'm very disappointed in you, Boston College. Shaking my head.
Yeah. So, Big Ten, we don't have to give any speeches to Penn State because they've pulled up their socks a bit. Not that they're in the clear yet. We could still draft in Tiff Weimer at all to give them a talking to. But what do you feel is going on with them right now?
I don't know. I haven't known all season what's going on with them. I've watched a few of their games on TV, and it's disappointing. I watched their game against Wisconsin, And you know, those are two teams that I expected to be doing really well this year, and it was an ugly game. And you know, both teams have struggled a little bit more than I expected. But you know, then Penn State went and beat Illinois on the road this weekend, and it was by all accounts a really good win. Hopefully that's them turning it around, which they said they were going to do, you know, last week and the week before and the week before and the week before. It's nice that they finally did it. The standings in the Big Ten right now are Ohio State, Wisconsin, Penn State, Illinois, and then the Michigans, etc., trickle down. Purdue is at the bottom. Well, you know, like two up from the bottom, but fortunately nowhere near the top.
Purdue is dirty.
Dirty, dirty. Big East. Big East is coming up on their tournament. Notre Dame. Let's see. Notre Dame clinched their division. I think Marquette clinched the other one, the American division. They're undefeated in Big East play. They haven't tied either. Notre Dame has two ties. They recently lost Taylor Knack. She vanished. You know, pulled a Kari Hanks, but like in mid-season. And nobody knows where she is or what happened. She disappeared off the roster. Not even listed anymore. Right before senior day, too. It's kind of weird. Really freaky.
That is mysterious. Do we have another mystery that we need to solve?
I think so.
Okay.
People are asking.
All right. So you write that down. Another mystery for the cross-conference detectives to solve. We solve the mystery of Kari Hanks by waiting for a press release.
Maybe we should be more aggressive with this one.
We should.
I'll see about it.
We saw the mystery of what Rich Rapino was doing.
We did. But we can't reveal too much of that yet.
No, we can't. Anyway, let's take another little break and we'll come back with the WPS and the Women's World Cup qualifying for CONCACAF. Back with the cross conference cast. She's Ruth.
And she's Joan.
Good one. Jumped right on it. Yeah, we're gonna talk a little bit about the WPS. Very little because not much is going on in the off season.
I don't
Since
think
we
you can
last
call
spoke,
it
Karina.
the WPS.
Huh?
I don't think you can call it the WPS. People
What
have
are we supposed to
kids.
call?
You're supposed to call it WPS, not the.
Oh, WPS. I'm sorry. I guess we wouldn't say the NBA, would we? Anyway,
We wouldn't talk.
since we wouldn't talk about the NBA anyway. Since we last spoke, Karina LeBlanc was traded to Chicago for their number two and third round picks in the draft. I think Chicago still has the number three pick. And I hope they're using that wisely. And we spoke with Julie about Chicago having all the social media mavens now. I think all they really need is Tiff Weimer, and then they're good to go. They have everybody. It'll just and they'll be the best.
We should ask Tiff what she thinks about Chicago.
Yeah. She seems to survive well in the cold, so.
She's done really well in the cold, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's interesting because Chicago also protected Loydon. So they're having two potential World Cup goalkeepers who are going to be gone for a significant chunk of the summer. And so I don't know if I don't think they're keeping Kelsey Davis. Well, I guess Kelsey Davis is free. I don't know if they kept Whitworth. I don't know what they're thinking. What are you thinking, Chicago, with this goalkeeper thing?
Maybe they're thinking the same thing we are, that the US won't qualify.
Or Canada won't. They're
No,
thinking either
Canada will make it.
Canada or the US will not qualify. So we'll see about that. I don't know if this is going to be one of those like we look back and see that was the big boneheaded move that ruined our season or what's going on with that. In other news, the coach of Atlanta is staying as get what's his name? Gagliolanis. Carly Lloyd's trainer, as I like to call him, is staying with the Atlanta Beat as their coach. Sure. I mean, I don't know what exactly Atlanta's problem was after they got all those St. Louis players because they, yeah. So, and the only question that raises is if Carly Lloyd, who really likes her trainer and think and he's her hero, I guess. What will she decide to make the move to Atlanta? Who knows?
Who cares?
Yeah. The list of protected players and free agents and everything came out last week. And there weren't too many surprises. I was surprised, is Kelly O'Hara a free agent? Is it did I remember did I read that right or did I make
Yeah,
that up?
I think like all the forwards at FC Gold Triad are free agents.
Okay.
I mean, okay, my theory is that that's just a really sneaky way of protecting them because free agents can't be taken in the expansion draft. So as soon as the expansion draft's over, then,
They'll just re-sign them.
yeah.
That makes sense. And I can't imagine they'll want to make too many changes. They don't really have many changes to make. As long as all their players are healthy, it seems they've got no problems. Let's not talk about the Buffalo thing because it still hasn't happened, or the Western New York expansion. I guess the only question left for the WPS is will they make it past 2011? The things we've heard through unofficial channels and just sort of conversations is that the outlook is unclear at best and just not good. Like the general attitude seems to be, let's see, I guess, if it lasts.
Yeah, the
It's.
players are shaking their magic eight balls and just not real thrilled with the response.
Yeah, it's. And I really think that this will be the last chance for a women's professional league for a long time if it fails. Like, I would say 15 years before we get another one. I don't know. Time moves a little quicker. Things move a little quicker nowadays, but I don't see like two failed chances at a professional league. That's not a good sign.
Yeah, within the same decade, I think you're definitely going to be waiting.
Yeah, the only thing I can see that would really, the thing that would make it put it definitely in the survival column is if the US women's national team wins the World Cup this year. Or next year, rather.
I don't know. I mean, look at those attendance figures at Santa Clara.
Well,
People
no, I
just don't
think if they
care.
win the World Cup, they can survive. I didn't say thrive. I didn't say like everyone's gonna rush out to go see the WPS. But they would definitely survive if the women if the women's the US women win the World Cup in Germany. So that's a very tall order for them. But I think
Especially
like
since we don't even know if they're going to qualify.
if they don't qualify, forget it. Nail in the coffin. But I mean that's my opinion. I don't know how you feel about that.
Are we moving on to national team talk now? Because
Sure.
I have another theory. I'm just full of theories for this podcast.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. I mean, whatever theory you want, go ahead.
Okay, so I was thinking, and I'm usually pretty pessimistic, and I'm not real happy with the US women's national team right now. But I was thinking, if they don't qualify outright, that would probably be a good thing for them because it changes the narrative. It gives them something else to market. Like they went into the last World Cup wearing gold, and they weren't the underdogs, and they were undefeated, and then they just sucked. And there was no narrative, and it killed the narrative for a few years. And now we've got this bland, Wonder Bread kind of crap that we're getting out of the US team. And so if they don't qualify outright, it gives them something, it first of all, it gives the team something to work towards, and it gives the media something to work with. And then if they do well at the World Cup, because there is another chance if they don't qualify outright, they have to play against, I don't know, Cambodia or something to qualify. And if they beat some other conference or yeah, some other team, I don't remember who it is, then they get into the World Cup. And then if they go on to do well at that, they've got that underdog story of coming back and blah blah blah, and it would just be something to work with, and I think it would be good for the US.
I don't know. It might be good for their narrative, but America loves a winner.
America loves an underdog.
No. What America are you living in?
The media one. I'm not
No.
saying that they don't win the World
America
Cup. I
doesn't.
mean, if they struggle to qualify and then they win the World Cup, then you've got that arc that they'll work with. These games are going to be webcast, no matter what the US Women's National Team blog or USsoccer.com says. CONCACAF.com will be webcasting them. The commentary will most likely be in Spanish and awesome, and far outstrip ESPN. And Canada will also be televising the games on like CBC or something. I don't know because I'm not in Canada, but I think that's way to go, Canadians. You care. I hope you guys make it. And that's it for the coverage.
We can talk about the roster, I guess. I don't know. The differences between this team and the 2007 team, it's slightly less, like, as far as the attack, it's slightly less Abby Ball. I say slightly less, but it's still Abby Ball. Which, if you've got Abby Wambach, by all means use her. But that's like I don't know. It's like you have an ace, but your opponent has a royal flush. That single ace is not going to do you very much if that's the case. Anyway, sorry, I should not make cross sport metaphors.
Oh, you should not compare cards to sports.
Cards is a sport.
Oh.
Poker's on ESPN all the time.
So we
And
can
I
talk about
always
spelling bees.
change the channel. So, because I know, oh, poker's on, time to change the channel. So the major differences, pulling up the roster here, between the 2007 and 2008 sort of generation, goalkeepers, we put in Jill Loyden. Defenders, Allie Krieger. That's a good choice, making an impact. And Becky Sauerbrunn. And then the rest is and Kat Whitehill's out of the picture in this case. Midfielders, Yael Averbuch and Lori Lindsey and Megan Rapinoe. And then the rest is pretty standard midfield, Shannon Box, Christine Lilley, Carly Lloyd, Heather O'Reilly. Not like you don't see many big changes. Forwards, Lauren Cheney, Alex Morgan, then A-Rod and Wambach. I can hear the train.
Sorry.
It's
I
okay.
can't do anything about that.
Okay.
I think it reflects on that roster.
yeah. So, well, you probably do you have anything to say about that roster? I mean, it's not any different than what we saw through the friendlies earlier in this year. And I guess so we can sort of expect that kind of play in the qualifying and then in the World Cup.
Really,
I don't
really
know.
depressing.
It is a little bit. I guess we can't say much until we actually see the qualifying games and see how they do once they're out of group play, I'll say.
I mean, considering that, you know, most other major teams that have a shot at the World Cup are, you know, most of them are getting better, getting stronger, and we're basically relying on the same old thing that, you know, that we've even seen in friendlies is starting to not work as well. That's, I don't know, I thought we brought in Pia to turn things around.
Yeah. And it's not like she doesn't have a wide pool to draw from. Is it just that I don't understand the problems, like, because it seems that the problems just kind of exist on all levels. It's media attention, it's also winning and playing an attractive game. And I think about, like, the 91ers when they retired, or most of them retired. And the message was always, I wanted to leave the game in a better place than when I found it. And they did for themselves. It was better for them. Because who were the up-and-coming stars when they left? Like, there was basically sort of Abby, maybe Heather O'Reilly, and Lindsay Tarpley were on the... And Kat Whitehill on that 2004 Olympic team, right?
Yep.
And so it was slightly better for them, but for the rest of the players, the people who are going to genuinely impact the game for the next, you know, 8 years or whatever, it's not better for them. It's worse because they don't have experience because nobody knows who they are. It's so, I don't know. I'm probably going to cut this out because it doesn't fit in with everything else.
How does it not fit in?
I don't know, because it's complaining about the 91ers, which is a different subject.
I don't think it's complaining. It's just, you know, putting things in context. Like, yeah, they left it better because they started when they were 15. And, you know, 15 years later, sure, things had better be better than when you first started. But mm-hmm. now we've gone through 8 years of, you know, slippage. Mm-hmm. We're not really seeing the growth. We're not really seeing the changes. We're definitely not seeing the development. You know, this was definitely the campaign that changes should have been made, not just because, you know, Pia came in to turn this team around, but also because, well, look at how our youth teams did this year. You know, you can't just rest on what's always worked. Clearly that is not working anymore. And I don't know. I worry. It's a big deal that I think that Alex Morgan has been brought in. This is the second time she's been asked to leave her college team during a key part of the season. The last time was in 2008, and that was probably a good gamble to make. Cal was doing okay then. They had other players that they could work with. And sure, they didn't have an amazing season, but they did all right, and she did really well. And I don't see that happening this year. She's in her senior season. So yes, this is probably a good career move for her. Well, if the U.S. qualifies, if they don't, then I'm not so sure what that says for her. But, you know, she's got other senior teammates who are looking at you know, they want to be considered for WPS. They want to keep going with their careers. And when all those seniors are together, they keep the team together pretty well. They can produce a decent result. So, I mean, it's not that Alex Morgan is selfish. It's just I feel for the players that got left behind, because I don't think this is going to do as much for Alex's career. It's a tricky thing.
Yeah, because we like, I mean, I see this as well, we can't complain about not having the younger players in and then say, oh, but don't leave your school for this.
I think Sidney Leroux could have done it.
I don't think Sidney Leroux had much to contribute to this team.
I don't think Alex Morgan has that much to contribute yet.
I think Alex Morgan has more to contribute in the long run,
Yeah,
and
definitely.
this would be more valuable.
Yeah.
Then Sydney Leroux just has what she has right now, and it may or may not be something that the U.S. could use. I think Alex Morgan has more than just what she has right now, and it's definitely something that could help the U.S. in the future.
But right now, she's really the only, kind of developmental player that's being brought up. And yeah, I agree that in the future, if she can get back in with the national team, if she can stick with the national team, then she'll be someone, that could be valuable, and this will be valuable experience. I don't know. I mean, there are other players that are also being part of CONCACAF qualifying and are able to be back and forth with their team. I don't know. I think that if the US qualifies, she should be on the World Cup roster. That would be a great experience for her. I don't know that she needs to be on the qualifying roster. And I really think she just physically isn't ready for this level of play yet.
I don't know. We'll talk after group play, let's say, because it's only 5 days long.
And we'll actually be able to watch group play.
Yeah, so that'll be exciting. We don't have a Twitter award winner because we didn't plan. We need to be better planners.
Well, and we spent so much time talking to players already the past
They're
month.
all winners. They are all winners. All right, so I think that's it, right?
Sounds good.
Okay. Bye. No.
Bye.
That's it for this episode. For full show notes, past episodes, and our blog, check out crossconference.com. Send us an email. Our address is crossconference@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this, please rate our show in iTunes. It's an easy way to support our show and help us get new listeners.